Okay, looks like we're good to go. So I will go ahead and get started. First, I'd like to apologize that I'm not here in person. I guess I think you could say I've got more savvy handling cattle than I do driving on bad roads. We were challenged with a storm yesterday and this morning that left us with lots of rain and some ice and snow on top. So I decided it was better if my Florida body stayed in Nebraska and helped at the feed yard this morning than to try to drive on roads that I'm not very good at driving at. So I apologize that I'm not there. Hopefully this will still be meaningful. So today I'm supposed to talk about what's the value of low-stress stockmanship from a PVR perspective. In this first slide, you can see that it's me asking a bunch of yearlings to walk past me in a corral. One of the big things that I try to do at the PVR with low-stress stockmanship is to teach my animals to be comfortable around me, to have confidence, to move when I ask them to move, but not to be afraid of me. So that's the first visual you've got there. And I'll ask Erica to now go to the next slide. Okay, so quite simply, I think that low-stress stockmanship is a requirement for a sustainable future. Perhaps instead of saying what is the value of it, I would throw out the idea that I think that our sustainable future rests in it. And I think that from several different venues or reasons. Number one, our job is that we're animal caregivers. And to me, the most important thing that we can do each and every day is offer animals the care that they need so that they can reach their God-given genetic capabilities. And I think that low-stress stockmanship allows us to do that. So as we talk about sustainable beef, as we talk about the environmental footprint of my farm or your ranch, we talk about converting resources efficiently so that we can grow the most pounds of quality beef using the fewest amount of natural resources. I think that all of us would agree that we have a finite number of natural resources. And so it's important that we work hard each and every day to make sure that we make the best use of them. So when we talk about sustainability, when we talk about animal welfare, when we talk about the judicious use of resources, low-stress handling plays a huge role there because the less stress that we put on that calf, the more they're going to be able to convert their resources and gain and produce more high-quality beef. Next slide, please. So let's talk about what today's roadmap looks like. I'm going to take a minute talking about what my farm looks like. I'm going to take a minute to talk about what role low-stress stockmanship plays in my business plan. I'm going to take a minute to talk about how I define low-stress stockmanship. What does it mean to me? I'm going to talk about why is it important that that type of animal handling, that type of animal care begin at birth? Why are we better as an industry when we can begin that with the animal's first interaction with a human instead of when they show up at the feed yard? And then finally, what do I think that low stockmanship role is going to be in the future? When I look at the beef industry 15 years from now, and hopefully I pass my feed yard off to one of my daughters, what is it going to look like? And what role is low stress stockmanship going to play on a daily basis? So we'll go ahead and go to the next slide. So a little bit of background information about me. I am a native of Palm Beach County, Florida. I graduated cum laude from Dartmouth College with a major in psychology in 1997. I laughed that I learned lots of things at Dartmouth. I went there a jock. I came out an intellectual. But probably the best thing I got from Dartmouth is the fact that I fell in love with a guy from Nebraska. I laughed at the last thing my parents told me before they put me on the airplane to go to college was, "Ann, stay away from those senior boys. They're nothing but trouble." And it only took me to Halloween to find my husband, Matt, and we've been together ever since. So they always say that your parents are right. I have to laugh every once in a while. My parents actually weren't right. So I married into agriculture. I moved to Nebraska in June of 1997. My husband and I made a life choice about where we wanted to spend our journey together. My husband is actually an electrical engineer. He has a master's degree in engineering and business. I was a psychology major. We could have done a lot of things. We chose to come home to the farm because that was the life that we wanted to live. Having a family was important to us, and we wanted our children to be a part of whatever we grew and built together as a family. And so we moved back to Cozad in June of 1997. Our farm today looks different than it did in 1997. Matt and I have certainly put our stamp on it. It's different. We could argue whether or not it's better, but it's certainly different. And I think that it is more sustainable today than it was when we moved here. Today, we have a 3,000 head cattle finishing feed yard, 4,700 acres of alfalfa, corn, wheat, and soybeans, 600 acres of grass pasture, and my husband owns and operates an alfalfa dehydration plant. We grow a blend of traditionally raised and organic crops. So my husband is a certified organic producer for crops. Our cattle are Progressive Feed certified and marketed through the Beef Marketing Group Cooperative. Next slide. So when we moved to Nebraska, my father-in-law said, okay, we have to figure out how we can all get along together, and you guys need to have the ability to put your mark on our business. And so I went to work at the feed yard. My husband went to work with our crop farm and at the alfalfa dehydration plant. And over the years, after we got our feet on the ground, my father-in-law has repeatedly told us that we need to come up with our own business plan. And I remember one day he sat down with me and he said, you know what, Ann, your business plan is going to be different than my business plan because you're a different person than I am. And your business plan needs to be a reflection of you. So I have made lots of changes at the feed yard since 1997. Probably took 5 years for me to figure out what was going on. I had literally never been at a feed yard before I moved back to Nebraska. So I got started learning how to run a scoop shovel, learning how to run a feed truck, learning how to check cattle and cowboy, shipping cattle, being on the processing crew. I still do most of those things today, but those are all things that I had to learn how to do when I got here because I didn't know. So probably spent the first 5 or 6 years getting my feet on the ground, learning how to do the basics of cattle care. I got very involved in beef quality assurance. Dee Griffin has been one of my greatest mentors over the years. Dee is in Clay Center, Nebraska, and he in particular helped me out trying to teach me things from a veterinarian's perspective. And understanding not just the beef quality assurance principles, but how you implement them in the daily managings and workings of a feed yard. And so as I got my feet on the ground, I started looking for things that I thought we could do better and differently at the feed yard. One of the things that became attractive to me is vertical collaboration. I think that we set our calves up for success when we can follow them from birth to harvest. We can measure their performance. We can document their care. We can figure out what we can do better next year relative to what we did this year on this journey that I call continuous improvement. So I started going out and trying to look for ranchers who wanted to trace their calves from birth to harvest. They don't necessarily retain ownership, but they make a commitment to work with me every year. I purchase the calves in return. They allow me to trace vaccine and health history on incoming cattle. I buy generally everything private treaty. I go straight from the home ranch to the feed yard, again, trying to limit stress and to bolster the ability for me to have a relationship, a meaningful relationship with my ranchers. I use my professional veterinary and nutritional consultants. I use them very heavily, although I have to say I'm not afraid to argue with them. When they tell me so that I need to do something, I think it's my job to ask them why. And so my relationship with my veterinarian and my nutritional consultant is very much a two-way street, and I think that we both learn from each other. I got into cattle acclimation and using the teachings of low-stress handling probably 10 or 12 years ago. Studied with Dr. Knopf Singer and Dr. Lynn Locatelli. Quite frankly, I haven't been able to pay them to help me very much since I manage a small feed yard, but they have been great. I used their video and learned from that. Dr. Lynn has been out at my place a couple of times, and you know, I had enough of a psychology background and enough of an interest in learning how prey animals operate that I've been able to teach myself and teach my crew. Today, the low-stress handling that we have at our feed yard is probably not exactly the same as somebody else would have at another feed yard, but it very much works for us. we place a huge emphasis on our calves. Everything we do, every day, we... And so the day revolves around the calves. We do very careful bunk reading. First thing in the morning, we deliver breakfast by 8:30. We try to make sure we deliver feed within 20 minutes today of when the animals received it yesterday. Animals are very much, cattle are very much creatures of habit, and I think that it lowers stress on them. So that they get feed at the same time every day. They're not getting antsy in the pen looking for the feed truck. They know, you know, it's there when they need it. We also put a big focus on clean and comfortable pens. Unfortunately, in Dawson County, we don't have a lot of slope. So we spend an incredibly large amount of time scraping pens, hauling off manure that my husband uses to fertilize our acres, and trying to make sure that our animals are as comfortable as possible. So in just a second here, they're going to unplug the phone and plug in the internet so that you all can watch a short video. This is a video of my middle daughter, Megan. She's 13 today. She probably was 10 or 11 when I shot this video. And it's a video showing how she goes into the home pen, asks the cattle to group and move, and then ultimately exit the pen at the beginning of an exercising or an acclimation session. So we exercise and acclimate our animals upon arrival, teaching them to walk in straight lines, teaching them to exit the home pen, teaching them to comfortably move down the alleyway, to have confidence with a handler, and also teaching them that when they go back in the pen, there's a full bunk of feed, so everything they need is right there. So I want to show this for a second. In particular, pay attention to the interactions that Megan has with the animals. If you're familiar with low-stress handling, you'll be able to see that there's lots of animals that ask Megan questions. They ask her what she wants them to do. She does a nice job of using alternate pressure to affect the flow of cattle. And in particular, I like to laugh. There is one calf in here that likes to yank Megan's chain, and so you can look for that interaction as well. So at this point, if you guys could pull up the video and watch it, and then I'll come back on when it's finished.
In first class on a flight from New York to Los Angeles, kind of making small talk, killing time, flirting with the flight attendants. 30,000 feet above could be Oklahoma. Just a bunch of square cornfields and wheat farms, man, it all looks the same. Miles and miles of back roads and highways connecting little towns with fun names. Who'd want to live down there in the middle of nowhere? They've never drove through Indiana, bitten that who plowed that earth, planted that seed, busted his ass for you and me. You're caught a harvest moon in Kansas. They'd understand why God made those flyover states. That mile-long Santa Fe freight train engineer seen it all. Like that flatbed cowboy stacking U.S. steel on a three-day haul. Roads and rails under their feet. Yeah, that sounds like a first-class seat on the plains of Oklahoma. With a windshield sunset in your eyes, like a watercolor painted sky, you think. Those flyers.
Okay, so hopefully you've got a visual of what the beginning of an acclimation session looks like at my feed yard. One of the things that comes to mind when I watch that video of Megan handling cattle is that they look to her for leadership. To me, if you can teach a calf to look to a caregiver for leadership, we're going to have a low-stress environment where the animal is able to thrive. And so when I often tell my crew that what we do every day should look like some element of harmony. And you know, the weather is going to throw crazy things at us, and not everything is ever going to happen exactly the way you want to. But when I go to work every day, I look for harmony, because I know that when I find harmony, that my animals are in a good place, and they're doing what I need them to do, which is accurately and effectively convert resources in order to make high-quality beef. Had somebody tease me sometime, you know, he spent a little bit of time at the feed yard, and he said, you know, Ann, you may not make any more money than the rest of us, but I think you're happier at the end of the day. And I think that I can tell you with confidence that having embarked on a journey of low-stress stockmanship makes my crew and I happier every day. Our interactions with our animals are more comfortable, and our lives are just more comfortable because we are finding harmony together on the farm. If we go to the next slide, please. So I've had lots of ranchers ask me, Ann, why do you acclimate? Why do you go out there and walk cattle up and down your alleys? Don't you have better things to do with your time? And so I want to take a moment to talk about why acclimation is so important. To me, it's a key component of transitioning cattle into the life of a feed yard. We teach them to recognize that the home pen is where they want to be. We always put cattle back out into a pen that has fresh feed. They learn to go to the bunk. They learn that that's where they want to be. The first day that they come to the feed yard, they have all kinds of energy to exit the home pen. By the last day of acclimation, you can see as the handler, they have more excitement and exuberance to go back into the home pen than they do to leave the home pen. And so there's very much a psychological shift that you can see with the animals as they start to attribute comfort and home in the pen instead of somewhere else. We teach our cattle to walk in straight lines, to exit the home pen, to travel with confidence down the alleyway and into the corral. In the corral, we ask them to walk past the handler with an element of trust. When I sort cattle or when we pull sick cattle off, it's much easier to do it when you have animals that trust you and will break off for you when you ask them to. We talked about this earlier. Cattle gravitate toward the feed bunk and the water tank more quickly. They go on feed more smoothly. That has a very positive effect on my feed convert the feed yard. It also enables safer, more effective handler-animal interaction, which increases the safety of myself and my employees in the feed yard. Comfortable cattle are more efficient. First, they make higher quality, and they're just plain easier to handle and make the daily workload of the crew more enjoyable. Next slide. So when I got the Drover's Trailblazer Award last year, they asked me to write an article. And in the article, I talked about the five lessons that my cattle has taught me over the last 20 years. And then I also talked about the five lessons that I've learned from my customers, my beef customers, over the years. And so this slide talks about the five lessons that my cattle has taught me. Proper preconditioning is vital to animal performance. I don't buy a calf that hasn't had a complete set of preconditioning vaccinations, have a good mineral program, and good health coming into the feed yard. I don't think it's fair to ask our animals to thrive in an environment that they are unable to thrive in, and proper preconditioning allows them to do that. I also believe that a calf needs to be bred with an innate desire to live. They need to have an element of vigor. They need to be phenotypically capable of remaining healthy all the way to the packing plant. If they don't make it to the packing plant, there's no reason for them to be there, right? We're raising cattle to make beef. They're food animals. They need to be capable of getting to the packing plant. I believe that limiting stress is critical for both cattle health and performance. And in order to effectively limit stress, we need to work together in order to continuously meet the needs of the calf. I think that each one of us needs to be cognizant of the fact that cattle's past experiences help determine the future. So cattle have much more simple brains than we do, but they remember experiences. And when you handle them on the ranch, you determine the interactions that I'll have with those calves when they come to the feed yard. So it's very important for us to remember that cattle's past experiences certainly determine how they handle in the future. And finally, it's the little things that count. Paying attention to detail when caring for a prey animal is a critical component for success. I try to think like a calf. The calf can't think like me, so it's my job as a caregiver to think like him. Next slide. So every once in a while, I try to drum up in my mind what words describe low-stress stockmanship. You know, what really is it? What do I think of when I think of it? I think of a caregiver. I think of a relationship with an animal and a person where there is an element of leadership and trust. I think of an effective degree of communication. So, you know, my animals don't communicate the same way that I do. When I want to tell my husband something, I open my mouth and I tell him whatever it is I'd like him to know. I can't do that with a calf. I have to use nonverbal communication to ask him through pressure and release to move in the way that I want him to move. So my communication needs to be effective. My communication also needs to have the appropriate level of urgency. So I'm going to ask a calf to do something with varying levels of pressure depending on the situation and depending on what I think is necessary in order to get the end goal. I think that low-stress stockmanship is based on quietness. One of the things that people always say when they come watch my crew vaccinate and work cattle is, my gosh, you guys are so quiet. It's just so quiet here. And that's how it is, and that's what we shoot for as a goal. I think our animals need to have the freedom to thrive. I mentioned this earlier. They need to be able to achieve their God-given potential. It's my job as a caregiver to enable them to do that. And finally, I think that low-stress stockmanship is a mark of healthy animals. Next slide. The report card that both you and I receive from our animals ends at the packing plant. It really doesn't end when the calf leaves the ranch. It doesn't end in the middle of the feeding period. It ends when that animal goes to the slaughter facility, because we're all in the beef industry. And I think that low-stress handling and the care that we give to our animals is something that we can control. And we know it's better for our animals. We know it's better for our environmental footprint, so it needs to be a priority for all of us. My 10 or 15 years of working with low-stress handling has shown me at the feed yard level, it reduces morbidity, reduces mortality, reduces feed conversion numbers, increases carcass quality, increases food safety, and also increases worker safety. Honestly, I cannot stand here today and tell you one bad thing that has come from the implementation of low-stress handling at my feed yard. It has been absolutely a positive home run hit, and it's something that my crew and I are very devoted to. When I brought it to the feed yard, it was my idea, and I have to say that my guys were pretty skeptical. But 10 years later, I would tell you that they are just as passionate about it as I am, because they've seen how it can work and change the way that we handle cattle and increase our animals' ability to thrive and perform. Next slide. So let's take a minute here toward the end to talk about Ann's crystal ball. And I have to say, sometimes my crystal ball is really fuzzy. But I wanted to offer a few thoughts about the future of beef production and some things that I think that the future will include. And before I go into those bullet points, I want to point out that the farm gate may divide me from my customer, my consumer, but it doesn't hide what happens on my farm to the people that are purchasing my product. And so while there is a division there between rural America and urban America, or between farmers and ranchers and their customers, that division is not a solid wall. It's an open farm gate. So we need to be thinking about that as we think about the business that we're in and the care that we offer to our animals going into the future. I think the future of beef production involves teamwork. I think it involves collaboration between feed yards and ranches, between feed yards and packing plants, between feed yards and customers. I'm all about teamwork, and I think it's critical to our sustainability. I think that our future involves reduced antibiotic use. I think that that's clear. If you've been paying attention at all to the headlines, there are many statements going on out there about the use of antibiotics on farm, whether you're talking about Subway or the Academy of Pediatric Medicine. So we need to be focusing on ways that we can reduce antibiotic use in the beef industry so that we can be responsible stewards on our farms, just like we're responsible parents with our kids. We need to improve in resource efficiency. We need to work on our feed conversion. We need to understand that the level of stress that an animal goes through will determine how many resources it takes for him to grow beef. We need to understand that we will have transparency with consumers and with customers, whether we want to or not, that transparency will be there. I'm more comfortable creating the transparency myself so that I have some ownership of it rather than leaving myself vulnerable to somebody else telling my story. And we'll have a continued focus on food safety and animal welfare. Next slide. So I think our attitude as farmers and ranchers will determine whether or not we have a future in the beef industry. And here are two pictures of my three girls. And on the left-hand side, they have their backs turned to us, and they're thinking about walking away. And on the right side, they're turned around, and they're smiling, and they're looking for engagement. And so as we wrap up here, I would leave you with the thought that your attitude will determine many things. It will determine the care of your animals, your ability to work with your customers, and ultimately how your future looks within the beef production system. Next slide. I was a cross-country runner growing up. I was actually both a swimmer and a cross-country runner, and so I tend to make connections between distance running and growing food. And I think it's much like a distance race. And so, you know, what role are you going to play? Are you prepared to pack with others in order to be successful in the long run? Or are you going to try to go it on your own? This is a picture of the Cozad Haymaker cross country team. These girls were just state runner up in Nebraska. These are four top ladies there finished within 13 seconds of each other during their 5K run to take the second place trophy. I would engage you all and encourage you all to think about how important teamwork is in the growth of food, because I think it's critical. Next slide. Oh, that's it. I thought I had one more, but that's it. So I think my time is essentially up. Would encourage you, if you have questions, you can contact me off of my blog site. You go to feedyardfoodie.com. There's an Ask Me section at the top where you can send me a private email. I'm also hoping maybe we can work technology out so that I can be part of the bullpen discussion tonight. But if that doesn't work and you have questions, please feel free to send them my way. Appreciate the ability to visit with you all today. Hopefully I shared something meaningful.